you're going to hear some very rare arrangements of the American Popular Songbook that were done by great pianists of the past that I have unearthed through the decades, and also hear some funny behind-the-scenes stories about the songs, and also hear personal stories of my relationships with the composers and the songs and various people that I've run into who have been associated with some of this music literature. So it's going to be a seamless one-man show of conversation and piano performances.
Well, tell us about one of the composers that you'll be featuring in the show that you did have a personal relationship with.
Yes, for instance, I'll talk about Hugh Martin, who passed away in March of 2011 at the age of 96. He was a very close friend of mine. I spent hours by his side. Although we don't know his name, we'll certainly know the song that he wrote, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. He also wrote The Boy Next Door and the trolley song for Judy Garland for Meet Me in St. Louis. And one of his favorite stories was about to Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. When he originally wrote the tune, he sang it to Judy Garland with this original lyric, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, it may be your last. Next year we may all be living in the past. And Judy said, I love the tune, but if I sing that lyric to Little Margaret O'Brien, the world's going to think I'm a monster. So he did change the lyric, and of course it became one of the great songs and most recorded Christmas songs of all time.
You also are very well known for your connection with the music of the Gershwins.
Right.
And also for a personal connection that you had with Ira Gershwin.
Yes.
I understand that you played for him. How old were you when
I
you first...
I was 12. I wrote Ira a fan letter when I was 9. We corresponded. He invited me to Beverly Hills when I was 12, where I visited the very reclusive lyricist. He barely went out of his house the last 20 years of his life. And I played the Gershwin Steinway. I played Embraceable You as he sang along the lyric. And what's so interesting is 35 years later, I did a concert at the Smithsonian Institution. And when Ira died in 1983, he donated the Steinway, the Gershwin Steinway, to the Library of Congress, where today there is a Gershwin room. So the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer did a piece on me when I was in Washington, and we went back to that Gershwin piano, and I played the same song on that very piano that I had played for Ira 35 years before.
That's an amazing story. There's no way you could have possibly anticipated as a child that you would revisit that.
Well, there would be no way that, as a child, this music would enable me to perform in every state of the Union and in Paris and in London, and to bring that story to adults and children, to be able to bring that story to mental institutions, to hospice units, to Rikers Island in New York City, to Carnegie Hall, and every high school auditorium, a lunch cafeteria, you name it, I've played there. And it's because of that inspiration and that story that has enabled me to really define my passion and focus the course of my life, which started when I was 12 years old. And as I always say, I'm going to be 50 this year. As I get older and I get more insight into this wonderful music and get this wonderful feedback from audiences as I travel, the passion only increases and the understanding only deepens.
Explain what you think some of the qualities of this music, and you can use the Gershwins as an example if
yes.
you want, why it maintains a timeless quality
right.
and why it continues to be.
Well, because it represents, number one, it's purely and uniquely American. And as Americans, we can take great pride in this music because not only Gershwin or Irving Berlin or Harold Arlen or Vincent Humans or Cole Porter, or Richard Rodgers, Jerome Kern, all these great, Johnny Mercer, it represents America. And it represents the melting pot of America, for they heard all of the different voices that came to this country to achieve the American dream, to come to this land paved with golden opportunity. And their parents came there to came to America to make a better life for their children. And when somebody like George Gershwin was growing up on the Lower East Side of New York, he heard the voices of the many cultures that came to this country, and it's synthesized into his one unique American voice. And what symbolizes that better than the Rhapsody in Blue? It's what we're all about. You know, think about this. A man by the name of Israel Berlin. Well, he changed his name to Irving Berlin. Now, he was not born in America. He was born in Russia. And he came to America when he was about 9 years old, all right? So here you have this Russian Jew, and in his career, his lifetime, he writes, White Christmas, Easter Parade, and God Bless America. Now, what can be represent America better than that?
Remind our listeners about the Gershwins' heritage.
Yes, Ira and George were born in New York. Ira in 1896, George in 1898. But their parents came over during the mass wave of immigration through Ellis Island in the late 19th century to escape the persecution of the Tsar, the discrimination against Jews in Russia.
And George Gershwin amassed an enormous body of work.
George and Ira wrote 1,500 songs together between 1924 and 1937.
Well, that's the thing. George died before he was 40, correct?
Yeah, he died on July 11th, 1937, at the age of 38 from a malignant brain tumor.
Richard, isn't your imagination pulled by the idea of what successes he could have achieved
with
a longer life?
Well, that's always a $64,000 question. Why? Because he was getting better and better as a composer as he got older. He wanted to be a serious composer. He was getting away from writing popular songs. That's what he wanted to do. He was talking about writing a string quartet. He wanted to set the Gettysburg Address to music. There was many things that he wanted to do, but of course he didn't get the chance.
Outside of their musical influence, can you share with us something, Richard, that you think you learned personally from having contact with these great composers?
We all need to be, our passions need to be inspired. You see, by having this contact that I've had, it's inspired me. It's made me feel even closer to the music. It's something very personal. When you have contact like that, there's something very special about watching and listening to a creator of a song sing and talk about his material. And I've had the opportunity to do that, you know, maybe with maybe a half a dozen composers or so. What it does is it fuels the passion to go out into the world, to share the stories, to spread what you love, to share this passion, and also give you the discipline to keep working and searching and getting better so you have a deeper understanding into what this music is all about, so you can communicate it with your audiences when you go out into the world. And every year, hopefully, you get better so you have more to give to the audiences as your life goes on. And that's what it's all about as far as I'm concerned.